Welcome to the Desert Sanctuary with Carl and Laura Forehand.
Often when we have doubts about religion or simply want to ask questions, it can feel like we are wandering out into the desert.
We would like to invite you to join our sanctuary, the Desert Sanctuary.
We've tried to pick guests that would resonate with and challenge us and our fellow seekers here in the desert.
We believe that a key to the journey is to keep asking good questions, and we believe that all stories are sacred.
Our hope is that you will find life and healing for your body and mind, and that you will be able to be where you are and be who you are.
And now, here is our show.
Hi, welcome to the Desert Sanctuary podcast. I'm Laura Forehand. I am here with Carl Forehand, and we are just going to jump in today because, like, I have butterflies in my stomach. I'm super excited about our guests tonight. We were just talking before we hit the record button about how much Derek Webb's podcast and music has meant to me. I will kind of start with a really brief bio. A 30-year music industry veteran, Derek Webb has sold millions of albums while ruffling political and spiritual feathers alike as both a solo artist and a founding member of a Texas-based folk rock band, Cademan's Call. And it's just so surreal to me because back when we were just talking about this, but back when we were in organized religion, I loved contemporary Christian music. Loved it. I listened to it all the time. And Cademan's Call was one of those contemporary Christian bands that I listened to all the time. And the music just really ministered to me. It spoke to me. And so when we deconstructed, there was something about, and still something about, contemporary Christian music and just music in general, to be honest with you, that, it just doesn't sit as well with me. However, I found your podcast, The Airing of Grief, probably 6-7 years ago. And I do not know how I happened upon it, but man, is it powerful. And I'm going to let you share about it, but it was as if, and I'm re-listening to it, it was as if back then and even now, I'm walking alongside of you and the people that called in. Yes. And it is just as powerful for me today as it was 6 years ago when I needed that. Mm. And because back when I first deconstructed, I could not listen to music. Right. Part of that was probably because I was on the worship team. And so, and just the, you know, so much hurt is wrapped up in that and stuff. Mm-hmm. Yes. But I've started listening to, and I know they're older albums for you now, but fingers crossed. Wow. Wow. Yeah. So anyway, I've taken over the podcast. No, thank you for being here. I told you before, I'm trying not to fangirl. I'm just really excited to finally get to meet you. And
yeah, same.
Thank you for, just everything you're doing, not only for me, but for so many people out there that are hurting. So welcome to our podcast.
Thank you. Well, when Flamey Grant texted me and said that she said she had just done your podcast, and she was like, I'm going to introduce you to these folks, and they're so good. They're doing good work, and just trust me, you got to go talk to them. And so any friend of Flamey's obviously is a friend of mine. So I'm thrilled to be here.
It's pretty good.
Wonderful.
Derek, we believe stories are sacred. And so when someone tells their story, it's sacred. And we want you to be able to tell whatever detail that you want. But our audience is probably mostly a deconstructing audience. Out in the desert is what we call things and so on. So tell us a little bit about your story. Most people know that you're Cademan's Call. Mm-hmm. And that's a big part of your history. But also since then, you know, is kind of the stuff we're interested in the most.
Yeah.
But whatever you have to do, dive back into the other stuff too. But can you just tell us your story?
Sure. Wow. That's like, it's like, all right, so this can be like an 8-parter. So I got my start in Cademan's, and we started the band a bajillion years ago. I mean, we started the band, early 90s, 92, and it was when we were all kind of first starting college and, and in Texas. So we were a Texas kind of based folk band, folk rock band. And we, a lot of us grew up aware of and listening to maybe what's called Christian music. I should say this early. I like to kind of define terms because I think words are super important and I want to be careful how I use certain words. And whenever I use the word Christian as an adjective here, like I need to make a disclaimer, and that is, and I've said it many times, so forgive me if anyone's heard it before, but that the word Christian, when applied to anything other than a human being, is a marketing term. I just want to be super clear about that. The word Christian cannot mean, when applied to anything other than a human being, it cannot mean what people use it to mean when they're talking about people. Because when you're talking about people, my understanding of it is the Christian people are the redeemed, saved people. These are the people who will be in heaven versus everybody else. That's the way people use that word. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that's how I use it. I'm just saying that's the way it's understood. If you were to use that about music, radio stations, educational institutions, theme parks, breath mints, retail stores, it can't mean that. The word Christian cannot mean right, true, good, beautiful, redeemed when it comes to things like music, because that would mean anything that's been rubber stamped as Christian, I'm using air quotes now, mm-hmm. that's the only music that's going to be in heaven. Somehow we found a hack, and whatever we rubber stamp in culture as Christian, this is the Christian music versus the other music. This is mm-hmm. These are the Christian retail stores versus the other retail stores. These are the Christian radio stations versus the other radio stations. It's the idea, I mean, what they're selling is safety and certainty. which are not for sale. You know, you see billboards that say, you know, whatever Christian radio station, it's quote safe for the whole family. That was the big catchphrase in Dallas, I remember. Yeah. And you know, and what's funny about it is like that's not even a good advertisement for Jesus. Like Jesus was not safe, and he was not safe for the whole family. Let me tell you that. But anyways, so safety, certainty, it's like come into our retail store and consume at will. Everything here has been pre-vetted for your spiritual nourishment and benefit. Come in, turn off your powers of discernment and just consume at will. That seems to be what's being sold mm-hmm. there. And yet, as somebody, myself, who's spent, you know, 3 decades, living in Nashville where the sausage is made when it comes to kind of Christian products and content. Like, I'm here to tell you that Christian content makers, Christian artists, Christian writers are just as likely to lie to you as anybody else, whether accidentally or on purpose. Mm-hmm. The word Christian does not make whatever you're listening to safe for you. It does not make it right, true, good, beautiful. It does not make it redeemed. So, but what happens is people like to kind of delegate and offload their morality or their values onto external things mm-hmm. like, well, we're just going to make sure our kids are just listening to the Christian music station and then we're good. It's yeah. like, no, teach your kids the powers of discernment mm-hmm. so they can, your Christian kids even, right. In order that they can discern what is coming over the airwaves to them that's completely misrepresenting God's character as it is taught in the Bible. I mean, if that's what matters to you and if that's what you're trying to teach them or whatever it is. So yeah, like if I'm going to use the word Christian as an adjective in shorthand, I have to stop. Because, you know, it's like one of my favorite interviews ever. Bob Dylan is like probably the guy I've learned everything in my life from. And so he's got this great interview. It was like a 60s interview when he was in London and somebody asked him a question. And he spent almost the whole interview making them define all the words in the question. Because he was like, if you're going to ask me a question like that, like we have totally different definitions for all those words. Who are people? What is success? What is music? What is like, and he made the person, cause otherwise you're agreeing to somebody's asterisks, you know, you're agreeing to whatever definitions they have for all these loaded terms they're packing into their question. You're agreeing to all of it without questioning what their definitions are. And that so even though it's problematic in my line of work, you know, doing podcast interviews or whatever else I may be doing, if I'm talking to people, it matters enough to me to slow the whole process down to make sure that I'm not using a word that 10 different people might have 10 different definitions for, because that's terrible communication. The word deconstruction is a similar word. You have to be more specific than that nowadays.
Yeah.
But anyways, I'm so sorry. So that was my caveat.
That's
good.
So
when our band got started in the early 90s, we had a pretty easy time of it. We had a lot of great things kind of fall our way. We wound up getting a record deal kind of early, and this was in the early 90s. And this imprint of Warner Brothers that we were on, we're just trying to figure out how to categorize us, because it's their job to sell records. And so they need to know as much demographic information as possible. So they identified that we were kind of spiritual, that some of us were identifying as evangelicals, that was a big part of kind of who a lot of us were. So they were like, oh, great, fantastic, Christian, boom, boom, you know, a rubber stamp, Christian music, fantastic. So they put us on their Christian imprint. And unfortunately, it worked really well. And so we got pretty successful in what's called the Christian music genre, which, again, is a fiction. It's a marketing term. It doesn't mean it's not helpful. Marketing terms are super helpful for us to find things in culture we wish to consume. So, like, if you're looking for Christian-themed stuff, look for the Christian marketing term. Absolutely. I mean, that's exactly what you should be doing. And yet, if you look at Spotify, you look at Apple Music, you look at Christian music is the one and only genre of the dozen or so that the big music genres that exist that is worldview dependent. All the others are about style. Mm-hmm. Reggae, rock, pop, folk, jazz, classical, name them all. Christian or gospel is the only one that is tied back to a worldview. That makes no sense, especially because all the music put together makes no sense stylistically. Because I've played many times at these like Christian festivals, which are not a real thing. It's a marketing term. Mm-hmm. They're not the right, true, good, beautiful, redeemed festivals versus all the other. Right. But anyways, and it makes no sense. There's like a boy band followed by a screamo band followed by a contemporary solo singer followed by, I mean, it makes no sense. Mm-hmm. It, as a genre, I mean, if you want to know who's winning the culture wars, look at a calendar and then look at the major genres of music on Spotify, and you'll see exactly who's winning the culture wars, and it's the Christians. Yeah. Okay, so all that aside. So sorry.
Yeah, I just want to say there's a big difference between you and Sean Foyt.
There you go.
Modern example. I know that's very real to you and Flamey right now. But
sure. Oh, and I'd love to get into that. But anyways, I'm so sorry I keep rabbit trailing.
No, you're fine.
Great. You got
but
it.
Anyways, and so we spent the 10 years I spent with the band, we spent first as a college band and eventually playing more churches, and because our songs were being played on Christian radio. And so that is kind of where we grew up, so to speak, in terms of our career. And then I went, beginning of the 2000s is when I kind of branched out, started making solo music. And so I'm still in that trajectory now. So I'm 20 some odd years a solo artist. But it was interesting because I feel like I got to the end of my Cademan's years seeing kind of behind the scenes in a lot of churches and Christian culture and a lot of just the way that that big machine works and what it takes to succeed there. And I had thoughts about it. And so I my first solo record I put out, which was in like 2002 or three, it was called She Must and Shall Go Free. And even that record there's a few big Christian retailers, especially down in the South, who wouldn't carry it because of language and content, because I was really kind of coming after what I at the time saw as the church's idols, at least in Western culture, like politics, and kind of conventional morality in the West versus, what I think the Bible kind of more says about, it's so much more complicated than people want to admit. And so anyways, so I kind of came in, out of step from the beginning. And my solo career has been mostly a lot of questions. And it's like, and I don't care if people agree with my answers. I am only trying to raise questions and get people to rethink, kind of what their opinions are about certain things. And we need to make no mistake that like your beliefs, let's try using the word opinions, I think would be so much more helpful in the way, in
much
the posture,
more accurate. Yeah.
Yeah. In the posture by which we communicate with each other about, our, what I like to say is kind of like our presumptions about invisible reality. And when it comes to things you cannot see, like God, things you cannot know, like the future, uncertainty is kind of your only choice you're left with,
right?
Which is not the enemy of faith. It's the prerequisite of faith, if anything. So there's no problem there. But like, it's like everybody, you have to remain somewhat uncertain regardless of where you're at with belief, with the Bible, with Jesus, with heaven, with God, because there are things you cannot see and you cannot know, like the future and like God, you can't. So we have to go into it kind of treading a little lightly. And I think a lot of evangelicals kind of really tread hard, and they come in really pushing this, you know, he's risen indeed. And it's like all this certainty that I can't relate to personally.
Yeah.
And so anyways, you know, you fast forward, you know, to like, you know, several decades of me making solo music. That is the expression, as I think, you know, as you said, either before we started or just after, you know, it's kind of how I express and externalize how, what I'm going through and how I'm feeling about my presumptions about invisible reality. I'm negotiating with those.
What I say about writing is it helps me know what I think.
Yes, and that's exactly right.
And
me more so than most, because like I am a verbal processor. I'm not like an internal. My wife is a super internal processor. So we'll be having a conversation and she'll sit quietly, which is the wise move. And then when she's ready, it's like, here's what I think. Here's where I'm at. Mm-hmm. I do the opposite, which is reckless. I hear my opinions when they come out of my mouth. Like I have to say all of it out loud and put 1,000 words on something that only really needs about 50 words in order to really process and look at it from every angle. And so, and I think a lot of times you're exactly right. Like my music tends to be my external processing in case it's helpful, which is another thing, Laura, that you and I were talking about just before we started, which is when it comes to this whole, and we can use this shorthand because I think your audience probably understands it. When you're going through this deconstruction thing, this audit of your presumptions about invisible reality, when you're going through that, it's insanely helpful to hear someone articulate where you are, especially if you're feeling very alone, because what the church does well is congregate. The church is so good at congregating around ideas. And as soon as you are out, it's like all of a sudden there's no one to congregate with. And yet that's not true because there is forgive the Bible metaphors, but like there's a cloud of witnesses surrounding you on the internet and in your physical life, brushing by you every day, that have stories, that have been through something when it comes to the church and religion and evangelical Christianity. But we just can't find each other.
Right.
But they're there. If anything, the church when I think about the church in my mind, I think of a sponge. There's always a little water in a sponge, always. Mm-hmm. You can never wring all of it out. But let me tell you what there's more of, is a shit ton of water that has come through the sponge. Mm-hmm. What the evangelical church does is it manufactures orphans, spiritual orphans. Mm-hmm. That's what it does. It manufactures them because it at any given time, there's always a certain amount of people who are actively in the church, but there is scores more people who have come through it and are out on the other side of it somewhere. Mm-hmm. Like it's a conduit, but it only holds, I mean, I know it seems like a giant community, but it's really very small compared to the amount of people who have come through it and have found their way out. And that's us. And that's the people who are listening. And it's like, and what's crazy is there are so many more of us than there are people in the church at any given time. There's so many more orphans that the church has kind of left and that have come through that that machinery, but we just can't find each other. And that's the one like pass that I'll give the term deconstruction, because it has become such a great flag to fly and to gather beneath because people see that and they're like, oh, deconstruction, that's me. I don't love it because I don't love identifying by where I've come from and what's behind me. I'd rather identify by where I'm going. I don't want to feel like I'm bound to something behind me. I don't want to be D anything. Mm-hmm. I want to be pro something, or I want to be, you know, even re something is not great because it's like I'm redoing. I'm still bound to something behind me.
Like reconstruction. Yeah.
But like, what am I pro? I'm pro justice. I'm pro equality. I'm pro radical welcome. I'm pro, marginalized voices amplified. I'm pro decent. Yeah, kind of. I'm pro kindness. Mm-hmm. I'm pro decentering of straight white narrative. Mm-hmm. I am pro like what else? So I really like talking about what I'm pro rather than what I am con or D. Mm-hmm. but it's the language we have. And I'm grateful if people have found their way to helpful communities and language by that term. I'm cool with it.
Can we talk about something you and Laura have been talking about? And she's probably wanted to ask a similar
question. But go ahead.
So coming out of organized religion, I guess we should call it, and having, we call it a PTSD.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's a lot of it, like I think you and Laura were talking about it a minute ago, but a lot of it is, who am I? What do I do?
Right.
Because for so long, the group programmed me, and they didn't teach me how to think. They taught me what to think.
That's right.
And so then now I'm alone, like you mentioned. Is that similar to what you're going to ask?
Well, what I was going to say is, you know, like how much does shame play a role in those feelings of aloneness, you know, because I mean, I'm hanging on every word you're saying, Derek, because that is exactly where I was. I literally thought, and I know it's like, it wasn't true. I know it wasn't true, but this is how I felt in that moment, is that I was the only one, you know,
this was
happening to me. And like you said, when you figure out that there's this more people out here than
a lot of witnesses. Yeah.
So, you know.
Yes, I think I hear exactly what you're asking.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And so here's some, let me throw some words at that. So like the way I have thought about it for me personally is, I spent maybe 30 some odd years, I just turned 50. So like 30 some odd years I spent working on my spirituality, my specifically Christian evangelical spirituality, like a Harley. And let me say it like this. Every single person has a worldview, and a worldview is a grid through which you look at reality in order to help you make sense of it.
Mm-hmm.
And the grid through which you're looking at it might be total chaos, total abandonment from higher power. I mean, but that's still, and you could say, and that might be your atheist or your, you know, I mean, atheism I relate less to than agnosticism. Agnosticism is about knowledge, and atheism is about belief. Mm-hmm. I don't have enough information to tell you about beliefs when it comes
exactly.
to invisible, unknowable
right.
things.
That's
agnosticism,
right.
I think everyone is an agnostic something, because you can't know the future or see the invisible. So we're all agnostic. Even Christian, even my Christian friends are agnostic Christians. Give me a break.
Mm-hmm.
But anyways, but for me, I spent all this time constructing this worldview, this grid through which I was looking at the world. And from when I was you know, high school age up through you know, about 10 years ago, the grid through which I was looking at the world that made it make the most sense to me was evangelical Christianity. And I really tinkered with it, and I built it, and I, like, you know, I worked on it, and I tightened it, and I, you know, and it's this big, but what happens is, when you go through deconstruction, which is the shorthand we're using, and you pull all that down, you pull the thread sufficient that the whole thing, the grid, just collapses, then all at once you don't have any grid through which to look at reality, which is to say, you don't have your feet on the ground all of a sudden. You're in free fall.
Right.
And so it takes a minute to get your bearings and to figure out, oh, does reality feel like a free fall? Because I could get comfortable with that. Is it just the surrendering to the ground that I think that is rushing towards me, that maybe is never coming, and maybe this crazy free fall, maybe this is what it is, maybe not.
Yeah.
If you don't like that metaphor, but like, it's really hard when you have all of the framework that you've built, or that has been constructed for you by your parents, by culture, and it's gone.
Yeah.
It's like you don't know what's right or wrong for a minute. And you don't know, as you said, who you are. You don't know how to look at yourself. You don't know how to. And so for me, I'll just tell you this quick personal anecdote, which is that as a songwriter, I've always considered it my, or any creative's, job description, if you like, to look at the world and describe it. That's the creative job description. Look at the world, tell us what you see. That's all you really need to do. And implicit in that is that you have a grid through which you look at the world, and that's going to come out in the way you describe it. And that's why a lot of Christian people make what's called Christian music, because they're looking through the grid of their Christianity. Some people make music about exclusively about the grid, which I think is not great art, which is 100% of what is categorized as Christian music. Mm-hmm. Other artists who I've come across over the years look through the grid of maybe their Christianity, and they describe the world they see, and that makes for much better art when they don't only make art about the grid, which is evangelical Christian, you know, that's gospel music. Bob Dylan, who I mentioned before, is like, I'm a huge fanatic of Bob Dylan's. When people find out I'm a Dylan fan, they'll always ask me if I love that trilogy of his Christian records he made, you know, in like the 80s.
Oh, right.
And I always say, here's the deal. Like, I love all Bob Dylan's records. They're like, you know, I mean, like, I'm not going to tell you which of my children is my favorite, but, but like, I like those records. I like Shot of Love. I mean, I like Moments on some of those records, but I am less interested in hearing Bob Dylan sing to me about Christianity than I am interested in hearing a Christian Bob Dylan sing to me about everything else.
I ask you a question about that.
Yeah, of course.
So I like to talk about, and we talked about this with Flamie, about being a songwriter, being a poet, you know, being a, and there's something about that. But one thing poets I know don't do is they don't talk about what they already know. They don't, like you're explaining that framework, they're not trying to fit in a framework. Usually what I think poets and songwriters are trying to talk about is what they're discovering and what's becoming real to them. And it's usually something they can't adequately describe. I used to listen to Bob Dylan interviews and they're always questioning him, and he gets kind of sassy, like, how do I know? You know,
he seems like he has no patience with people.
So good. But, you know, again, it's not continually describing what all of us are certain about already.
Yeah.
Real stuff.
Well, some of it is. See, like all the Christian music is precisely that.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying.
It is a lot of artists, in my opinion, disingenuously talking about all the things they are completely certain about, and that you also can be certain about. I don't relate to it. Maybe it's not, I'm not saying it's bad art. I'm just saying I don't relate to it. And I think the point I was making is when you have your whole grid pulled apart and disassembled and it collapses, then it's just disorienting. And so for me personally, when I went through that, it was about 10 years ago, and it was right before I made a record called Fingers Crossed, which came out in 2017. But I almost never made that record because I had gone through the heaviest kind of season, the hard climax of what I'll call my deconstruction for the sake of time right now. And I didn't understand how to describe the world that I was looking at. I didn't know how to do it because I didn't have any framework I was looking through. I didn't know how to categorize, or I didn't understand how to talk about what I was seeing. And then it really took me some time to start to put some of that back together. But I'll tell you, like, it gave me writer's block for a long time because I was just so disoriented. And the thing that pulled me back was when I was going through my own grief and deconstruction, whatever it was, and I was looking at that time, as people naturally do, I was looking for soundtrack. I was looking for music to comfort me, to accompany me. And I was finding very little. There was very little music to go with that I could bring with me and listen to as my soundtrack as I was going through all my real wrestling and digging up the roots of all of my beliefs or whatever about invisible stuff. And I think what finally pulled me through it and got me writing again was realizing, oh, like, for me personally, what I can contribute is to leave something where I couldn't find something. So the thing that I needed and couldn't find, let me see if I can make, and then there'll at least be one more record for people who find themselves where I am now and also cannot find music, cannot find soundtrack, because that's part of what makes you feel like you're alone. And it's never you're at a place no one's ever been before because no one's talking about it. No one's singing about it. No one's writing about it.
Yeah, there's no well-worn path.
That's right. That's right. And at that time, about 10 years ago, that's exactly how it felt. And so for me, I was like, oh, like I need to contribute something. And so I started to write very vulnerable and very raw. It was not the way I was used to writing. Normally, by the time I was writing a song and let alone kind of just releasing that for people to hear, I had thought circles around it. And I was very settled on what I felt or what my opinions were or whatever it was. That record is so different, was so different for me at the time because, you know, the ink and the tears were wet on the page when I released it. I mean, I am still, as I said before you tonight, unsettled about a lot of what I talk about on that record. And it was kind of my spiritual, I call it my kind of tale of two divorces, because I was going through both a horizontal and vertical divorce around that time. I was just going through all of it at once. And I say all that really to say that that is where the Airing of Grief podcast came from, is as I was talking to some friends of mine about the whole experience of writing the songs and finding my way through it and finally contributing. And then the record came out and people's response to that Fingers Crossed record, it seemed like none of it was about the record. People were responding with their stories of what they'd been through and how it felt for them. Cause they could see and they could hear that that's what I was doing. I was telling them my story of how it felt and what I had just been through and what I was going through. And so it just fascinated me that, no, I was so like, it was the longest break I've probably ever taken between records in all my career. And I was so anxious to know what people thought about it. And yet all that I could find were other people sharing their stories. And so I noticed that right away. And I was talking to this one friend of mine, and my friend said, well, you know what you should do is you should, like, clearly there are not enough spaces for people to safely discuss this.
Right.
There are not spaces. And people need to talk about this more, because you just putting out this record about it, everybody's response was them wanting to talk about it. And so we thought, okay, well, how could we do that? And so what we did, for any of your listeners who don't know what our podcast was, what we did was we thought, well, what if for all the people who were responding to me, like on social media or whatever it might be, or in an email, you know, kind of wanting to talk about their story, we thought, let's give them a place to do that. You know, there's way more stories than there are safe places to tell them. And so we created like a thing where people could just reach out to us and say, hey, I want to tell my story. And we were like, we won't use your name. You know, we'll even disguise your voice if that's something you need. If you're in an active harm situation, but you need to process and talk about it.
Sure.
We'll do whatever we need to. We'll anonymize you in every way we can. But if you're okay with it, let's record all the conversations and then let's just give everybody 20 minutes. And so I basically put a thing up on my website and I was like, who wants to tell me their story in 20, try to tell me their story in 20 minutes of what they've been through with the church or spirituality. And we had hundreds of people respond. And so I did hundreds of 20, 30, 40 minute phone calls recorded with people where I basically just said, you know, we did a quick introduction. Then I was like, okay, tell me your story. Like, tell me where you're at. And we had some of the most remarkable, courageous people tell us their stories. And some of them 10 years, 20 years, way ahead of us and me, where we were at that time. Some people actively in harm's way. Like, I remember there being, and maybe in our first season, somebody saying like, I am a music director at a church, an evangelical church. I am queer. They don't know. And I am actually treating it like a reverse mission field. I'm staying here in order to prove to these people that they can in fact love gay people because they love me, but that's only because they don't know that I'm gay. And at some point this is going to come out and then they're going to realize that they're capable of something that they didn't think they were capable of.
Yeah.
Because I put them, you know, because I'm doing this intentionally. And there were remarkable stories. And everything that's remarkable about the podcast comes from all we did was basically hold up a microphone out publicly. All of it that was amazing was a result of all the people who were willing to come forward, tell their stories. And I think way more than my record ever could have done. it helped a lot of people hear their stories articulated by people they did not know, they'd never met, and it made them feel less alone. Because for every person who was willing to tell their story, there were probably 100 people who couldn't.
Right.
And so that was the Airing of Grief. That was our podcast that we did a handful of seasons of. We don't do anymore, but I'm grateful that it's out there, and I'm grateful you found it, and yes, that's exactly why we did it. You know,
well, and I love the raw honesty, and I mean, and part of me, like back when I listened to it the first time,
yeah,
years ago, man, there was I was so envious of these people that.
Right. I was too, honestly.
Opportunity to talk to you about that. And you are so genuine and you really listen to them because not everybody was, nobody was hateful or anything like that. But I mean, some people like, you know, questioned you about things.
And there were more than a few people who signed up only to kind of have a debate with me, maybe. Like it's kind of a bait and switch, but we went through with it. And I was like, listen, let's talk.
Yeah. No. And that was something that was really memorable.
I loved it. I loved it. Honestly, I wish we were still doing it. I loved it.
Yeah. I do too. I wish you were too.
Can I make a comment about that? Cause
of course,
I had a question that doesn't really fit now, but does it bother you that evangelicals dismiss instead of discuss? Because they're right and God is on their side.
Yeah.
We just were taught not to do that. Don't even get into that discussion.
Well, you obviously, and I'm sure your listeners will understand and relate to, like the absolute existential terror, the stakes are so high. Mm-hmm. So when I sit with my evangelical friends, I don't have a dog in the fight. I know the language and I understand the ideas and I studied the Bible for decades. And so, I mean, it's not like something I don't know something about, but we'll talk about it. And for them, it is literally life, death, and eternity. For me, I'm just trying to be as intellectually honest as I possibly can and do my best to, there's this great quote. And I forget who said it, but somebody can Google it and find out. And it was that if a God can be killed, they must be killed.
Mm.
And it is our job to be like the one thing I still agree with John Calvin about is that the hearts of men and women and people are like idol factories. And all they do 24/7 from the day we're born to the day we're dead is manufacture things for us to call God. That's what our hearts do.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have got to be vigilant in being atheists to all the false gods in the world. Mm-hmm. And that is full-time work. You cannot be lazy about it. You cannot offload that and you can't take easy roads. It's hard and the stakes are high. And so for people who are talking about that kind of stuff, it is life or death. But for me, it's like, listen, you know, I respect you. I hear you. But you know, it's like, we're having two very different conversations because I'm able to sit here calmly and just kind of talk about it, apply the scientific method to it. What can you demonstrate to me? What evidence of any of that are you, other than saying, well, the Bible says it. And so I believe it, but like, beyond that, talk to me about what's the evidence? Let's talk about it. Sure. And I'm not being, you know, patronizing. I really mean it. Like, I want to know because
if there's I want to hear it. Yeah,
that's exactly right. If there's some reason to believe that there is an all powerful and simultaneously all good creator of all things that is governing whatsoever comes to pass, I want to know about that. And I want to be in the flow with that. I want to align with that if that's true. If it's not, then, you know, I want to be an atheist to every false god, every false god. And maybe the God that I'm an atheist to at this point, and I obviously I'm using the word atheist in a more anecdotal way, but like maybe is the God of my making. And it certainly is, of course it is, which is my understanding of the evangelical God. Then with a lot of my intellectual and emotional and contextual shit, you know, all stacked on top of it, that was not a real God. You know, the one that I worshiped for many years was not a real God, not nearly. And it's kind of hard to say that the Protestant God is a real God because there's like 12,000 denominations. I mean, there is not one God, gang, that we're all talking about. Mm-hmm. Like, there isn't. Mm-hmm. So that's why you have to be specific, yeah, and you have to break big categories down into smaller categories to really have the conversation. If it's going to be meaningful. Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah.
I want to switch gears mm-hmm. a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So obviously, you've been a tremendous ally to Flamie. Mm-hmm. And it's real easy to notice that. Can you talk about Flamie Grant and Sean Foyt? And
I would love to. Yeah.
By the way, I call him a creep.
He's creepy.
Not many positive things I could say about Sean.
I'm with you on that. Yeah. So.
Whatever, so however you want to talk about that.
Yeah, so Flamie Grant is probably an artist that your audience knows. Flamie is a tremendous drag performer and singer and songwriter, musician. One of the most talented, hardworking I've ever met in all my decades I've done this. I mean, Flamie is just, you know, masterful in the way that she does all of her work. And we connected years ago. And in fact, long before Flamie had even been born, and so, yeah, we have been friends for a long time. And so, and you tend to want to like do work with your friends. You want to hang out and work with your friends. And so I guess like maybe last year, Flamie and I had both duetted on each other's records. And so for Flamie, that was Bible Belt Baby, which is a fantastic record. That was Flamie's debut record. And you really, really need to go listen to that. It's so, so, so good. And then my record that I put out last year was The Jesus Hypothesis. Mm-hmm. I'd sang on a song of Flamie's called Good Day. Flamie had sung on a song of mine called Boys Will Be Girls. Yeah. And then Flamie came and was in a video with me for that song where, we went to San Diego. It was Flamie's idea. We went to San Diego and, over the course of the video for Boys Will Be Girls, Flamie puts me in the paint, like basically gave me the gift of dragging me essentially. That was kind of Flamie's term for it. It's like, well, let's drag Derek Webb, you know? So from the beginning of the video to the end, the boy becomes a girl, literally. Mm-hmm. And, which was a song that was written for somebody who's very dear to me, who came out to me. And I think I was the first person they ever shared that with. And I wrote them the song as my response so they could hear it more than just one time. Cause That's I thought nice. It might be something they That's needed really nice. To like hear over and over. So Flamie heard it and was like, let's do a video. Let me put you in drag. It'll be beautiful. And it was. Mm-hmm. And then I invited Flamie to come to Nashville, just the backstory for folks. For my record release, cause I live in Nashville. So we were doing a release show here in town and I really wanted Flamie to come and be part of the show, to sing with me, to open the show, God knows. And so Flamie came to town and, opened the show, unbelievable, came up and sang with me during Boys Will Be Girls. And at the end of the show, we didn't think we were doing anything controversial, everybody, I swear to God, but some friends of ours were there who might have a background, Laura, like you in Christian music, they might have recognized Jen Knapp, who's a friend of mine from 20 years ago, and then Tiffany Arbuckle, Tiffany was the lead singer of Plum.
Okay.
It was a tremendous, crazy,
good, Plum too. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Crazy
yeah.
good band.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Tiffany and Jen were there, and we all, the four of us, got in a picture together and we all posted it the next day. Like, oh, so much fun. Record release show. Flamie was in town, you know, in Nashville and, you know, Jen was there and Tiffany was there and it was so great. And within a couple of days, Sean Foyt, who don't know who he is a self-proclaimed MAGA worship leader. Mm-hmm. And Sean got kind of popular for doing big outdoor worship events in the absolute
middle of COVID.
In the absolute climax danger of COVID, Sean declaring religious liberty was out doing big outdoor worship events with obviously no masks, no distancing.
Yeah.
And basically was going all around the country doing super spreader events,
super spreader.
And has a lot of pictures with Trump. And, you know, I mean, it was like a whole thing. Mm-hmm. And he's very conservative and he reposted my picture and basically said, the day that former Christian music artists partner with drag queens is certainly an indication of the end of all days, the end of days. You know, they are, this is revelation, you know, right before our eyes. Flamie and I had no idea that apparently in the Living Bible, which is a paraphrase, there is a line in there about former Christian musicians and drag queens, and then the, you know, the horse of the apocalypse or whatever. You know, how do we miss it? But anyways, so he posted this, and he's got a huge platform. So I immediately texted, you know, Tiffany and Jen and Flamie, and I was like, "Hey, everybody! Like, we made Sean Foyt's, you know, timeline or whatever. Like, woohoo!" And let me tell you what you don't do. You don't throw shade at a drag queen. That you just as a rule, you don't do it, because you're going to lose. Because Sean Foyt had no idea the impact and the resonance that an artist like Flamie Grant has, especially over on TikTok and some other, you know, maybe places that Sean wasn't hanging out or paying attention. And, you know, so Flamie threw some shade back at Sean, and Sean, Christ-like, you know, of course, came back and said, "Well, it's a good thing nobody knows about you or cares about you or listens to you." A very Christ-like response, you know, to shame and you know, and to demean somebody. And Flamie said, "Oh, is that right? Nobody cares or listens, or oh, okay." And basically, Flamie then commanded, you know, the army of people who have been wronged and hurt and marginalized, you know, by the church, and basically said, "Let's prove Sean Foyt wrong, gang, and let's show him that people are listening and do care." And, you know, and the result was Flamie launched this social media viral campaign that resulted in her song that I duetted on, A Good Day, that was on Bible Belt Baby, went to the top, the number one single and number one album on the Christian music charts. Flamie went straight to the top. So it was a bit of judo. When Sean Foyt gives you lemons, you set up a lemonade stand and you sell lemonade. And that's exactly what Flamie did. And every press outlet in the world, y'all, covered this story. It was such a great story. Flamie and I did interviews with everybody from Rolling Stone to Good Morning America to The Guardian to, I mean, name an outlet. We talked to, and Flamie talked to all of them. And it basically catapulted Flamie Grant, y'all, to like such a level. And it was just the most beautiful, you know, thing. And so here's my takeaway, and I'll wrap up by saying, you know, in 30 years, you know, I mean, between my decade with Cademans, and I'm still with Cademans. I mean, we played two shows at the Ryman last year. We put out some new music last year, you know, so like we're still semi-active as a band. We're still family and obviously friends, and so we still do stuff. But in all my career in music, the thing I am easily the most proud of, including Dove Awards and everything that we've received, is being some small footnote, having played some small part in putting a drag queen at the top of the Christian music charts. That is the thing, y'all. I will die a happy and fulfilled man, you know, as a result of like the good work I feel like I've done with my great friend Flamie Grant. Yeah. So if anybody doesn't know that story or has not heard that music, please go seek it out. It will be very comforting to you, I think.
It's encouraging.
It's a great story.
It's encouraging to see people cross boundaries, because, you know, black people are writing country music now, which they've always been a part of part in the history of that anyhow. Mm-hmm. But now they're Beyonce and so on. It's exciting.
It feels like, honestly, the decade we're in and the moment we're in, although I know it's extremely wrenching and hard, and we've got Trump coming up for, you know, another election now, and and all that. Yes, in view, it feels to me like this has been a decade of marginalized voices being brought in and platformed and centered, at least an effort to do that, more so than I've seen at least in our country's history. And it's been very encouraging to me to see the way that marginalized, little by little, women, minorities, queer people, little by little, you know, it's not just about white, straight fucking men anymore.
Right.
Like little by little, you're seeing it being more centered and more normalized and more exactly the way it should be. You're seeing more and more and more of this. And it's at least a challenge to the status quo, which to me is deeply comforting and exciting.
They can no longer as easily control the narrative.
Yeah, that's right. It's no longer white, straight man normative. Mm-hmm. Like that's normal or something. Like that, I feel like that age is, and you know what's stupid is we're just barely starting to catch up with our European neighbors and some of our other, folks who are very postmodern. Like we're barely catching up. We went through Prohibition. They didn't, we've got some morality issues, some triggers we got to sort out, over here in America. But like, it feels good, honestly, to me. Like I'm seeing these voices being amplified and being centered and platformed. And for me, I mean, that is the primary intention. Like when I'm thinking about music and releasing music, I'm trying to figure out how can I help and in every way surrender whatever tiny little platform I have to bring in all the marginalized voices that I have seen in my entire lifetime slowly but surely being brought to the middle. Like how can I help with that? How can I be an ally to that? How can I be a crusader for that? And so, that feels very much like what you're doing as well. Yeah. It takes all of us doing it. So
one more sub note to that, and then we have two more questions for you, but, the sub note to that is sometimes though, even in progressive Christianity where we are a little more inclusive, we can also get caught in the business of doing church and the things we got caught in before. Drag down the DNA from evangelical Christianity as well. Yes. And then things like abuse survivors can be ignored, and we're still creating the same abuse. So it's the things you mentioned just now that are important, and it's not our brand. It's not, it's not the type of Christianity and just battling evangelical Christianity is not enough.
No,
it's but what it about is what you're for, like you said. Go ahead.
That's right. And it's muscle memory. Mm. And so unfortunately for us, and here's the thing, I will be the first to confess to you. Like I think it was the third season of our podcast. It was hard. It was really hard. It was hard for us because we realized, and it took marginalized voices to come in and teach us and tell us that when we're just, if we're not putting intention into decentering ourselves, and I say ourselves as like me as a straight white man, if I'm not intentionally decentering myself from the conversation, then straight white men will recenter in whatever new thing we're doing. And in the third season of our podcast, we received some challenge on that and we dealt with it. We were like, you know what? We've heard from some marginalized voices, some minority voices, some queer voices, some female voices, some... and we realized that, oh my God, even in our podcast about telling our stories of deconstruction, we've managed to recenter fucking straight white men. How did it happen? And it was so infuriating to realize that muscle memory kicks right back in. So you have to really fight and work and think. You cannot be lazy. You have to really work hard at decentering yourself and platforming and amplifying and promoting marginalized voices, especially as people like us, we have to work so hard at it because it's what our circumstances, because of the muscle memory of culture and reality, it's what it wants. Mm-hmm. So we have to fight that. We have to fight that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you're exactly right. It happens very often in progressive spaces, slowly but surely. Straight white men recenter again. They recenter again. Look how it works. Yeah. It's like magnets. It makes no sense. And we have to fight it. But it does happen. And I'm as guilty as anybody. And if you want to know how guilty I am of it and how asleep at the wheel so quickly we were, go listen to the third season of our podcast and you'll hear us have to deal with it. And we did. And we tried to. Yeah. And so. And it's hard work,
Yeah, and it's about narcissism, and it's about
It's
about a lot of things.
I love that word, intentional, though.
When we did
it takes intention. Mm-hmm. That's right.
Mm-hmm. When we did our Leaning Forward conference last year, we had to intentionally amplify women's voices, and there were some queer voices in there.
Yes,
but it you know, it had to be intentional, mm-hmm. just like
yeah.
you're saying.
Yeah.
So we ask this question to people and we never prepare them for it.
Great.
We don't even always ask it. But so the question is, if you had a billboard that everybody could see, what would be on your billboard? And I used to say it has to be short enough, but Laura said it's your billboard. So it can be as long or as you want it to be.
Anything you
want. Love that.
What would you want people to see on your billboard?
So it would, I'm circling around a thing.
Yeah, that's fine.
And for me, it would be your kindness is more important and persuasive than your rightness.
Mm.
I don't care how right somebody is. What speaks to me, like when somebody comes to me and they want to talk to me, and I can tell they're trying to sell me something, especially when it comes to spirituality or the grid through which we're looking at the world. If whatever, and what's interesting is Christianity is part of where I get this framework, but I like it. So it comes forward. God does not get everything in the divorce. Like I bring this with me, this is mine. But like, if whatever you're believing is making you more kind, it's making you more loving, more patient. Mm-hmm. I mean, let's just rattle off the fruits of the spirit if we want.
Right.
If it's but kindness, and you said it earlier, Carl. I mean, that's a huge issue for me is kindness. Mm-hmm. It's a thing. It's really hard to fake, you know, especially in private moments, in unpublicized moments.
Yep.
If whatever you're believing about the way the world works is making you more kind, it's making you more radically not tolerant, but radically loving and welcoming, then I'm interested and I want to hear about it.
Mm-hmm.
If what you're believing is making you more bigoted mm-hmm. and more intolerant and hateful and aggressive, I'm not interested. I don't want to hear about it.
Yeah. Right.
And so the thing that's persuasive to me before I hear the first word that comes out of your mouth is your kindness. If I see mm-hmm. and I intuit mm-hmm. kindness coming out of you, I want to hear everything. Mm-hmm. Tell me everything about how you see the world. How did you get there?
Right.
How do you do it? Tell me everything. I want to hear all about it. I'll spend all day. I want to hear everything. And if it's the opposite, I'm not interested. I don't give a shit. I don't care about it.
Right. That's very good.
So kindness, you know, mm-hmm. is like so much more important than rightness, you know? And yeah, that is, as the Bible would say, it's the evidence of what is invisible. It's the so whatever you claim is buried under the ground. Whatever you claim are the seeds of your belief. What's hanging on the branch is what shows what's up. That's what shows what's really going on. And if what comes out of you is aggression and hatefulness and intolerance, and then I can tell you exactly what's planted under the ground. I can tell you exactly what is under the soil for you, what's invisible. I can tell you what the seeds of your faith or whatever you're claiming, I can tell you what it is based on what's hanging on the branch. And your own Bible tells you that is ultimately what shows the evidence of what you claim. Exactly. And it is yet invisible. Yeah. So if you're claiming to follow a loving, compassionate, radically welcoming God, I'm going to see that hanging on the branch way before you open your mouth. Yeah. That's all that matters. It's all that matters. Yeah.
We interviewed Pete Singer, who took over at this organization called Grace. He took over from Boz, who is Billy Graham's grandson.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Okay.
And so they're trying to deal with the issue of abuse in churches.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Setting policies and investigating and so on.
Yes.
And he said the goal is never preserving your organization. Mm-hmm. He said, the goal should be stop hurting people.
That's exactly right. Do no harm.
Be kind.
Do no harm.
Be kind. Love your neighbor. You know,
I mean,
back to Jesus.
It's crazy. What's crazy about this is like, it's so not complicated. People who are trying to justify their behavior with complex theology are people who are missing it. Mm-hmm. People who are not getting it, because it is not complicated.
Right.
It is about radically loving and welcoming and showing kindness towards people who are marginalized. I mean, that is what Jesus talked about. Right. It is about the poor. It is about people who are looked over. It is about people who are not valued in society. Mm-hmm. Those are different people in 2024 than they were in year 01. Mm-hmm. Right. And so it's like, but that is what it is. And it's not complicated. If you're making it complicated to justify your behavior in the world or the way you treat people online, then you are, you've missed it.
Yeah.
You're not a safe person and you've missed it completely. You're not on God's side in that case.
Right. Mm-hmm. It's true.
Oh, yeah. It's been so good. I don't even know how to, I know.
Is there a second question that we only asked?
I do have a question, but like, I'm taking this all in. It's so good. And I do hope that after this, that one, we can stay in contact. Two,
oh, I love it.
Yeah, I do hope that we get to like come see you in person sometime.
I would love it. We got to hang out. Yes.
But for now,
yes.
Where can people find you? Where can they find your music? I've already posted. I think I will share a link on our Facebook page for the Airing of Grief because I think.
Oh yeah.
I know you did it many years ago, but it's still so relevant. So relevant today.
I love that. Sure.
But in the meantime, how can people find you? What things are you working on?
Yeah.
Well.
So I'm always writing and releasing new music. I'm always touring. I'm blue collar. It's what I do. And so your best bet, honestly, I mean, it's asking a lot of people to go to like a website, but DerekWebb.com, DerekWebb, DerekWebb.com. You can go there and you can find everything. And, or any social media at DerekWebb, DerekWebb. That's me. Two B's. And, if you go to, anywhere you listen to podcasts and you search for The Airing of Grief, you will find our podcast. And, we don't do it anymore, but it is there that witness is there and you can still listen to that and spend time with it if you'd like. But I would love it. I would love it if people would, either find me on social media or DerekWebb.com. That'd be great. Yeah.
Wonderful. Wonderful.
Yeah, Derek, I want to thank you for joining us today.
Thank you so much.
That's a pleasure.
Yeah.
I've never sweated in a podcast before, but I am I am right now.
That's because we got going. That's because
That's right. Yeah.
Like, high energy. We got moving. That's what I'm talking about.
And
love it. Love it.
Really appreciate it.
Well, let's talk again sometime.
I hope. I do hope.
For the listeners out there, thank you for tuning in. Don't forget the Evolving from Religious Trauma book just came out as a soft release. Make sure and let us know if you can't afford that book. We've got it marked down as far as we can. We'd love to try to get you a copy somehow. But as always, be where you are, be who you are, and be at peace.
Thank you for joining us today on the Desert Sanctuary podcast.
Remember, all who wander in the desert are not lost.
We believe all of our stories are sacred.
We are always here if you need someone to hear your story.
Check out our blog on Papios and also our YouTube channel.
And stay tuned for our Leaning Forward conference.
Remember, we love you.
And be at peace.